maybe you haven't exercised enough and you just eat crappy food, or, you know, there's other stressors in your life, could be trauma. These are all going to affect you. So in my view, it's just kind of this accumulation of happening.
Hi there, I'm Anne-Marie McQueen, a menopause and midlife journalist. I have 25 years of experience covering science, health, and wellness, and I created Hot Flash Inc. to inform, inspire, and entertain people who go through perimenopause and menopause and the people who care about them. This podcast brings you interviews with scientists, doctors, practitioners, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and more. In the end, our menopause experience is about so much more than our symptoms. I think it's a total and complete mind, body, and soul shift. It's taking radical responsibility for every single part of our lives. It's becoming who we were born to be. It's nothing short of a hero's journey. And I am here walking the path right beside you. We're going to have some fun too.
So first of all, I love when you say stop blaming aging for your slowing metabolism. Would you also say stop blaming perimenopause and menopause for it too?
Well, I always look at those as more like symptomatic parts of aging. So yeah, I don't think they have to be a horrible part of how you move through this world and age on some level. I think we put titles on them that they're just going to be this miserable part of our lives, because they can be, right? And so depending on, you know, your views and probably your current health. So I think you have to learn to look at it a little bit differently and see what part can I take into making this part of my life better.
And it's incredibly complicated when it comes to nutrition. Like, I feel so many people just don't know what to eat anymore. And there's so many different competing ways. Can you just break down as simply as possible what your approach is?
Now, you know, wrote a whole book about it. Your elevator pitch?
Yeah.
Right. The elevator pitch. So everything is with bioenergetic view or pro-metabolic. I mean, people like to label things. I don't particularly like to label things, but everybody wants to know what you're doing. So you got to label. You got to give it a name. It's an energetic approach. So the entire thought process is how to support your cells' energy production, because when your cells are producing adequate energy, then there's enough energy for all the systems of your body to have fuel to do what they need to be doing. Because when we look at the things that the context of metabolism essentially is how your body is using food to turn into energy so that it can function, essentially. And since all the systems in your body require energy, how you're absorbing, digesting, and then utilizing that energy is super important. And so it breaks it down to like, okay, well, what foods will be most beneficial to that process? And maybe what food maybe will be somewhat detrimental? I don't like to get into the whole fact of that, you know, there's good or bad foods, but maybe more of what are more supportive to you at this place in your healing process and what maybe is more beneficial to you now. But I do believe that when somebody is healthy and things are working optimally, that you can eat a wide variety of diets and a wide variety of food and function properly. It's when things are off that you might have to make adjustments. And then it's, if you come from this context, it's like, okay, well then, how can I get my body to use energy better and produce energy better? Because if I have more energy, then my systems will work better.
And your premise is that, or one of your premises is that the time we hit our 40s, a lot of us have sort of harmed our metabolisms by calorie restriction, by overexercising, burning ourselves out. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Because when we look at something like metabolic rate and how well your body is internally burning energy, I think there's a misconception of what that actually is. So people, I think that I can just work out a lot and that's going to increase my metabolism, right? I'm going to burn more energy, but that's not necessarily going to improve your internal metabolic rate. And so maybe I should like kind of differentiate between like a basal metabolic rate or how your body is using energy at rest. And when it's working right, everything's working right in your body. And that means like your digestion, your hormone function. So you have, you know, regular periods, you're sleeping well, you feel your mood is stable, your energy is stable, your hair is growing. All of those things require energy. So all of those would be working if things are running optimally. When we start having stressors, and those can be anything from exercise can be a stress, work stress, relationship stress, mental stress, whatever those are, those actually take energy, but they're external from our internal system. But our body has to like constantly thinking like, well, how can I create energy for this exercise? If this person's not giving me enough fuel to run, well, then that means if I'm going to exercise and there's not enough fuel, then I'm going to have to lower other functions in the body to create enough energy for me to get through this workout. Now, that's okay if we do it periodically, but if we're continually under eating or under fueling our systems and then over exercising and then, you know, working 12 hours and taking care of a family, over time, that's going to start chipping away at our health. And it doesn't happen immediately. Your body is super amazing. And certainly just these acute stressors that we put upon it in a healthy place are not going to have a detrimental effect. In fact, exercise can have a very good effect if you are properly fueled and properly rested and so forth. It becomes a problem when the system isn't working properly and it's already overstressed. And then you add these other stressors on that start making it feel worse. And then we can't understand, well, I'm doing the right things. I'm dieting, I'm exercising, I feel like garbage. And again, that's usually an accumulation, right? When our 20s, we can kind of do that and it not have an effect on us. 30s might start having more an effect. Certainly, and when we hit our 40s, we're looking at decades of having these habits. And not everybody's there. Maybe you haven't exercised enough and you just eat crappy food. Or, you know, there's other stressors in your life, could be trauma. These are all going to affect you. So in my view, it's just kind of this accumulation of happening. And then, of course, when we do hit our 40s and we haven't been taking care of ourselves, and maybe we've had really bad periods and all this, then yeah, it's now perimenopause is going to be hitting and it's going to be not a great journey because our system is not working optimally at that point in time. So we have to kind of work on trying to build that up and maybe nourish it or take some stressors off to see if we can kind of go through that process a lot easier versus, you know, throwing drugs at it or hormones at it, you know, and so forth.
Okay. So I want to get into that part later, but you said throwing hormones at it. So just off the top, you know, hormone, we're hearing a lot about menopause hormone therapy and how it can help us through this and how it's sort of like a magic pill. But when you said throw hormones on top of it, it made me twig. Like, it seems like you're saying underlying things need to be sort of addressed too. If you add hormones to a system like this, what are you going to get?
Right. And let me just say, I'm certainly not a medical doctor. So if somebody is on hormones, I don't certainly want to tell you to get off of them. This is just a viewpoint of, yes, I think if you are having a lot of issues going into perimenopause or menopause, the first thing that needs to be addressed is your health, your lifestyle. What are you putting in your body? A big thing with a lot of people is they're just not regulating their blood sugar properly, meaning they're not eating enough. They don't know how to ingest enough carbohydrates per se to keep their body fueled. Maybe they're not ingesting enough protein. Their blood sugar is going all over the place all day long. They feel anxious. They're starting to feel depressed. All of those things can be addressed by properly managing your food. And if the person in front of you is not talking about that, and they're saying, hey, we can just put you on a hormone and that might make you feel better. It could. I'm not saying it won't. But is it really fixing the problem? I feel like on some level, it's doing something to your system, but I don't really think it's fixing you. And again, doesn't mean you won't feel better. And I don't want to get hate because be like, well, I took my hormones and I changed my life. And I'm not saying that that cannot happen to some women. But from my perspective, there is another layer that should first be addressed. And to see if you can improve your health. And in my experience, if you do that, then a lot of times they don't need to be going on to these therapies.
Mm-hmm. So what does moving into this pro-metabolic way of eating simply sort of look like?
So the fat process, again, it's all about fueling your cells. And what does that look like? So one of the thoughts is your cells and basically every cell in your body works best on glucose. And so that means having a significant amount of carbohydrates in your diet. People in today's world are all very scared of carbohydrates. They're going to make you fat. And all of that is just complete fallacy, to be honest with you. And if you look at the data, you know, all these other diets you can lose weight on, at the end of the day, they're usually just calorie restrictive. Right. If you remove an entire macronutrient out of your diet, you take carbs away, you're going to eat less, and certainly you can lose weight that way. However, that usually might come with some other consequences. But when we look at cellular respiration or cellular metabolism, right, your cells essentially breathe, they exchange gases at a cell level. then the macronutrient, which we have three, fats, carbs, and protein, that is going to work best is the one that basically is glucose, which is carbohydrates. Carbohydrates all break down into glucose. So that's its your cell's preferred source of energy. That's where it runs the best. That's where it's going to produce the most heat, the most ATP, and other byproducts like carbon dioxide, which we won't get into that too much, but that is an important function of cellular respiration. So a decent part of the diet would say eating healthy carbohydrates. And what I mean by that are things like fruits and roots and some vegetables. What works for an individual is going to depend a lot on their current state of health. And one thing that is always addressed is how is their GI function doing? That's a big component because obviously that's the entry place of all your nutrients and your energy. So we have to look at that too. And if their GI system is off or not functioning right, or every time you eat something, it's having, you're constipated, then we look at that and go, okay, we don't want your digestive system to have to be overly worked. Again, everything requires energy in your body. Usually when you're overstressed, the GI system, your gut, your intestines, everything, are one of the first things to become compromised because you digest best in a resting state. So if someone's in a chronic stress state all the time, most likely they have really bad digestion problems. So we kind of go there first and let's say, all right, well, we don't want your digestive system to have to utilize tons of fuel to break stuff down. So one belief is let's give you foods that are really easy to break down. And so that can be like fruits or simple sugars. Those are a lot easier to break down than more of the starchy carbohydrates. Doesn't mean you cannot use them, but for some people that would work best initially. So that's where fruits and juices, honey, all of these things can be a decent part of the diet. Now, again, it's very individualized and it depends on the individual and what kind of diet you're coming from, but that is usually a big component. And then another component is using animal-based proteins for your protein sources, because certainly that is also very important. Protein is your structure. It's what your hormones and enzymes and all these things are made of. So that's pretty important. And we also know that animal proteins are far more bioavailable than your vegetable source proteins. Again, it doesn't mean that you can't have those in your diet, but those proteins are also going to be a lot harder to break down. They're a lot harder to get the nutrients out of. You need a lot more of them to get the same amount of protein from. So we want to come from a place of how can we get you the nutrients and energy you need without taxing your GI system that much that it can be able to extract what it needs and to start healing your system. So those are two really big components of a kind of a pro-metabolic approach. The other one is that we usually use like more saturated fats like butter and coconut oil, tallow. Those are going to be utilized over the vegetable or the seed oils. The premise is that there's going to be less oxidative stress from those fats per se. They're kind of safer. And so there is certainly a lot of controversy over what fats are best. There's certainly data on both for pro and anti reasoning. But the primary thing is that essentially, you know, we are a hot human being and for putting in these like more volatile fats like seed oils and the vegetable oils, that they can create more damage in our systems. So basically it's, again, it's more easily digestible carbohydrates, nutrient-rich proteins, which are like animal proteins and seafood and shellfish and the organ meats and eggs, dairy, and then also more saturated fats.
Okay, so first of all, organ meat. This is like, I've been hearing this more and more and more, right? And I just never eat organ meats or thought of eating more organ meats. What's the wisdom there?
Well, I think it's more of like addressing eating the entire animal. I think each kind of organ has different nutrients. The primary one that's recommended is eating liver. Liver is the most nutrient-dense food on the planet. So ounce for ounce, it has more nutrition than any other food. And again, some people cringe at that because they're like, liver. I mean, for some, it is certainly not the tastiest food, but it's packed full of nutrients that is very bioavailable to the person. So for someone that is really compromised and maybe has been living a life where they have been very nutrient deficient and they don't want to eat tons and tons of food. You can get it other ways, but it's certainly, you know, when you have something so nutrient dense, you don't have to eat a lot of it to get a big bang for your buck. So having something like that, because some people, when they come to the space, their metabolic rate is compromised. And at that point in time, maybe they aren't utilizing a lot of calories when you in that resting state, because if they're overly stressing their system, their body has adapted. And so they are maybe just surviving and, you know, on 1,000 calories. And but maybe they need 2,000 calories to fully heal. So for someone like that, you have to move them through the process quite slowly so that they slowly move up calorically, which can happen without putting a significant amount of weight on. And because you want them to get some nutrition density in there, you want to give them these kind of foods that get a big bang for the buck. It doesn't mean, again, you have to do them, but I have found that they are super helpful for people through this process.
And you said dairy. I mean, this is another thing that I stopped eating dairy years ago because I felt that it was upsetting my stomach and I couldn't tolerate it. And I guess I was listening to what people were saying and, you know, everyone's with the nut milk. What is with dairy? Why do we need to be having dairy? What kind of dairy? This seems sacrilege almost to some people, right?
Yeah. I mean, to me, dairy is like a superfood. It has really good quality of nutrients in it, one of them specifically being calcium. I think a lot of people have... Okay, so another theory is on dairy, obviously, there could be some sort of lactose intolerance, right? Maybe that we all shouldn't have milk after we're birth, because certainly no other animals do that. No other animals do a lot of other things, like we ride planes and look at the internet and all these other things. So I feel like that argument is just stupid. But ultimately, a lot of people can't tolerate, or they might have some sort of lactose issue, because under stress, the areas in your small intestine can get damaged, and they aren't going to be producing the enzyme to break down that lactose. So stress in itself can affect how you digest milk. The quality of milk can also have an effect. So if I find that a lot of people, it's not really the lactose that bothers them anyways. Maybe it's just the additives in the milk or the processing of the milk. So sometimes just trying a different milk can be the thing that helps them. And so using something like goat milk, which is usually a primary, like an A2 milk, which a lot of people find easier to digest, can be better, or a raw milk, or a not pasteurized or a non-homogenized whipped milk. The key at this point is just kind of to try different options for yourself. But also, if you haven't been consuming milk for a long period of time, it's not normally smart to just go in and start consuming quarts of milk. You might have to work up that quite slowly. So maybe you can go as slow as a tablespoon a day, or having some other dairy option that doesn't have lactose in it. So maybe some cheese or even Greek yogurt. Some of those options can be better for someone than when they start to incorporate it back into their diet. You have to always ask, you know, is it this? Is it me? Is it my digestion that could be affecting how this food is being processed? And in my experience, when you address someone's GI system and you start trying to fix their system and allow it to actually start working because now it's getting actual energy to it, then you can slowly incorporate dairy and have no issues.
How big of a problem do you find with the people you work with that with gut and digestive issue problems and their perimenopause symptoms? Because in a lot of ways, they kind of mimic each other.
They can. I think a lot of it is, again, over time, and we come from this energetic system. It's like, okay, over time, and in today's world, right? So in today's world, women that are hitting their 40s, 45s, they've been in the diet culture world for decades at this point in time. And whether they've been on repeated diets or they've been trying to exercise or their life is just so stressful. You know, women are pushed in many different directions in today's world, whether they're mothers and working or they're trying to just manage their lives on many different levels. It's a lot. And so essentially what's happening when they get older, their systems just aren't working. And these are probably the same ones. And what I might find is that people that have a really hard time in perimenopause are also the same people that have had really tough periods all their life or other issues. Usually when you sit someone down and they're starting to go through perimenopause and you go through their health history, this isn't their first thing that's ever happened to them. They've had a series of other things been going on for decades. And so it's like, okay, you've been having these other issues. What could be possibly going on here, right? Maybe your period has just been not supported, right? So maybe they're having some estrogen issues. Maybe they haven't even been truly ovulating. You can still have a period without ovulation. So certainly we track, for a lot of women, it's important to track their morning body temperature to see if they're actually ovulating, because when progesterone is released post-ovulation, you should get increase in temperature, morning temperature. If you are not, you are not ovulating. And if that hasn't been happening, then you haven't been producing progesterone the latter part of your cycle. And that can create some massive hormonal issues in the system. And so we kind of have to look at that, right? And is that so going back and then saying, okay, what can we do to support this cycle? What does the system need? And underlying the first thing always is this person getting enough energy to support their energy demands? And so we look, what does your life look like? What's going on? Oh, you work 12 hours a day. Oh, you have two children in addition, and you also have a husband. Oh, and then you're trying to work out at 5 a.m. in the morning, fasted. I mean, these are all these crazy things. And then they're like, I feel like garbage. And I'm like, okay, this is why. Because you're just, and it literally for so many people and so many women, it's like, you're just not eating enough. And you're putting all of these demands and your body is always adapting. Because your body's number one goal is to keep you alive. It is not to procreate. It's not to have good digestion. It's not even to sleep. It's not to feel good. It's to keep you alive. So that's the hierarchy of what's happening. And so it's doing its job, but it's doing it and it has to lower function on all of these systems in your body that aren't a priority. Your brain is pretty darn important. Your heart, lungs, all those things are pretty darn important. But these other things like digestion and having a good period or even being fertile, you know, we don't need any of those to keep alive, right? And so what instead of what we've done is instead of addressing why are these people coming out this way, we've created entire industries to support that, right? We have infertility clinics now, $1 billion industry. Again, not saying people should do those things or whatnot, but you still want to address your health. And again, if the person in front of you isn't talking about that with you and just saying, you know, and you're like, I like to get pregnant and you work a 12-hour day and all this craziness. That to me is just insanity because your system is saying, if you're not able to get pregnant, there's something in your system saying, I don't feel safe enough to carry a baby, period. Again, there might be some medical conditions out of that. And again, not a medical doctor, but certainly I don't find that that conversation is being had when people go in to get this help. So, yeah, I feel like I got off on a tangent there.
You talked about progesterone, and I'm interested in perimenopause because I've seen you recommend sort of a progesterone oil. So I'm just wondering how you feel about progesterone in perimenopause. Kind of an it's kind of an
that's a complicated topic. I would say it's a useful thing to be available. Again, not a doctor. Still always the most important thing is to what can you do to support your own progesterone production, right? Which as women, now again, you will produce some progesterone through your adrenal glands, but primarily with women, it's produced ovulation through your corpus luteum. So once you drop an egg, your corpus luteum develops and that's what's going to produce progesterone. That's why if you are not ovulating, that needs to be addressed. And For most women, it is an energy production issue. And so that should be addressed. It could be a detoxification issue. So if there's an excess of estrogen going on in the system, we know that estrogen is being detoxed basically through the liver and then excreted through your stool. And so if there's something in there that's not allowing for that, again, going back to your digestion, if you have a sluggish GI system, then you can get estrogen recirculating through your system, creating some hormonal issues. So detoxification is certainly important. Addressing the GI system is important. Making sure you have enough energy and nutrients, because again, your body ovulating is a incredibly metabolic demanding process. It takes more fuel. And I think that's why a lot of women don't feel as well during the luteal phase of their cycle, or they start having all these symptoms. And a lot of it is because you have this metabolic process going on that does require more energy. And if you are supplying your body with more energy, which most are not, then you're going to have symptoms, right? And they're like, I'm becoming insomniac, you know, I don't feel good. All these other things start happening. I get headaches. I'm like, yeah, well, all of those can be coming from not enough energy in your system, right? Those are symptoms of a body that is underfueled.
And you talk about anti-metabolic foods.
like these are foods that seem to almost be working against you. You've mentioned soy. Like, what are some of these foods and why? Why are these?
So, yeah. So, I mean, one of those are certainly the polyunsaturated fats. They have been shown to certainly have an anti-metabolic effect on the system. You know, some of these PUFO oils, even like soy emulsions that are given, and they're given to people like in cancer. You have cancer, they're given to you basically to help you put on weight. So a lot of these oils and fats are even given to cattle and pigs to help them fatten quicker. So they're basically also being sold to us. And the reason they're being sold to us is because they've been shown to lower cholesterol numbers. And we have to always remember that just because something lowers cholesterol or has some sort of effect doesn't mean it always is necessarily good for us. I think we have to learn to kind of look at the entire system and not just look at this in this kind of isolated reductionist viewpoint and just say, hey, just because this one thing does this, it's good for us. Well, what else does it do? And what other effects can it have on us? And I think that's always a big question to have. Some other ones that can be problematic to people are certainly things like soy or even some of these, I don't want to say they're anti-metabolic, but can just be creating issues. And those can be the legumes or even raw leafy greens. Again, don't want to actually say that they're bad for you, essentially, but in a person is compromised, that's having a hard time getting energy and fuel, giving them a lot of those foods that are really hard to break down and for the human body to extract what it needs isn't normally the best approach. And so I'm not saying that nobody can ever have those foods forever, but in a compromised state, if you have a lot of GI issues and you're eating a lot of green salads or a lot of beans, more than likely you're having some bloating and gut issues and all of these things that might be, again, making your GI system work really hard, where it's not really getting enough energy to do what it needs to be doing with those types of foods.
So better to stick to the meat than the roots and the fruit, meat, roots, and fruits.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not even meat. I mean, it's more, I would say, some meat for sure, but also a lot of fish. A lot of shellfish are good because they're super high nutrient foods. Some of the organs, liver, oysters are definitely recommended because they have super high amounts of zinc. And then dairy is a good component. Again, it's going to be easier on the system to digest as long as you are able to digest it, meaning, but then we have to go back to the GI system. So it's a kind of a healing is in layers. And I think some people get into this space and then they all just throw everything, you know, they read a book because most, like, you know, diets are like, do these foods. And so it's not quite that simple. It's kind of saying, okay, where are you at in your healing? And if you try something, if you try milk, it doesn't mean keep doing it if you keep having a bad response. It means something else needs to maybe be addressed first, and then maybe then you can try it and very slowly add it in. So there's this kind of layers to the healing. But the goal is essentially that eventually you should be able to eat a wide variety of different foods and still be okay, right? I mean, you always kind of want to base how your body feels on what you're going to eat. But if you're feeling well and you want to go out and eat a big bowl of beans, go for it. You know, you might still have some issues and maybe that might be your deciding factor. You don't want to do that again. But I don't want to ever say that anything is off limits. I think it just means that sometimes during your healing process, you might not be able to do something as much until you get better. And then you can start incorporating a variety of things in. Sorry.
Oh. I was fighting that for a long time. We'll cut that out. How long does this healing process, how long can it take? Like, what's the range?
That's a good question because there is no true answer to that. For some people, it could be, I think, feel better in like 6 months. I think a lot of it depends on how long you've had your symptoms. And if you've been dealing with some chronic issues for decades, then you can probably expect some time to get better. I think it's important to note that people do start feeling better within 30 days to a few months. And I think that's going to be the motivation for them to continue. But, you know, we like to monitor things like not weight per se. We like to monitor things like temperature and pulse, because how warm your body is and how much heat it's releasing is one way to monitor how well your metabolism is doing. Certainly not a perfect measurement, but it's something you can do at home and not have to go get a lab to do to see, hey, am I getting warmer? And that is a good thing. So there are tools that are suggested so that you can actually monitor your progress. And of course, the other part is monitoring your symptoms. You know, things like digestion. How is that improving? Is your period improving? Are you regular? Are you ovulating? All of those things are important. Obviously, as you approach menopause, that's going to be irregular. And it's just kind of understanding, you know, how do you best support yourself through those processes? You know, your body is now having a change because you are eventually going to stop ovulating through menopause. And what does that look like? How do you continue to support your system through that process again? Because I think there's one fallacy or that women believe is that when I go through menopause and I'm through menopause, that my body isn't producing any more estrogen at this point in time. And so I need to go get on estrogen or hormone replacement or any of those thoughts or any of those things that they are told to do. But that isn't necessarily what is really happening. Yes, maybe your ovaries aren't producing as much estrogen, but your body is still producing estrogen. It can be produced in the cells of your tissue. You just might not see it in the blood. And so we have to understand that even in women postmenopausal, they have massive amounts of estrogen in their tissue. And so this thought that we need more estrogen postmenopause, in my opinion, is not correct. The hormone that essentially is not happening is the progesterone, because you are not ovulating anymore and you aren't producing progesterone like that. So making sure that the body is, again, in a more non-stress environment that's able to regulate its blood sugar, it's getting enough nutrients, getting enough energy, I think can get through menopause quite easily without all these symptoms. But if you choose not to go that route and you're just going to hormone replacement therapy, that certainly can make you feel better. But I'm not sure it's addressing the bottom issues.
And okay, this is a space where there's a ton of supplements. Like it's just supplement, you know, from magnesium on to like, my gosh, what did I try? Saffron, this wheat, you know, I think the supplements, you've got a lot to say about supplements and our ability, even digestive enzymes. If you're having these gut issues, like where does this fit in your plan?
Well, I mean, I'm all about food first, right? I'm all about addressing lifestyle and habits and understand your body and food first. Are there some supplements that can be complementary? Sure. And I think it depends on that person, what they need. But usually when I start talking to people, they're already on like 10 supplements. And for somebody that has a really compromised GI system, throwing a bunch of supplements in there might be making them worse. And, you know, half the time when I ask them, like, have any of these made a difference? And usually they either don't know, or I don't know, you know, and sometimes we're like, all right, well, let's just slowly take them off and see if you notice anything. And a lot of times they feel better because their GI system isn't all disrupted by a lot of these supplements that could be creating some GI irritation. So again, not saying that they cannot be helpful. Some can, not against them. I think there's a lot out there that are garbage. And, you know, I don't think that should be a first line of any sort of protocol. If somebody isn't really looking at the big picture of how your body's being regulated, how is your energy production? You know, are you getting enough fuel? Are you getting enough nutrients via food? Because that's always going to be the best delivery source to anything. Then, and they're just saying, you need all these 10 supplements. You know, I might question that protocol. But hey, but if it works for somebody, great. I mean, you know, but a lot of times I think they get to a sticking point. I'm like, I'm spending all this money and it's not really changing anything. And it's not going to if you don't address the underlying issues.
Intermittent fasting, because you just hear all the time about how good this is, how it gives our digestive systems break, autophagy. I never know how to say that word. Autophagy. Where in the pro-metabolic eating sort of approach does intermittent fasting have a place? Can you overfast? Like, how do you feel about that?
So I am not a pro intermittent fasting person. I think the best time to fast is when you are sleeping. We all fast every night when we're resting, and I think that's a safe place to fast. That's when your body, your GI system should get a rest. You don't really need to push yourself into 12, 24 hour or these really long fasting cycles to try to improve your health. I'm not there saying there can't be some benefits. I mean, some people certainly do it for religious purposes, or maybe they get some mental clarity. So I'm not going to say you shouldn't, but if you think it's improving your digestion or in health per se, if you're already in a compromised state and you stop eating for long periods of time, that's a stress on your body. People feel clarity because they have adrenaline raging through their system to basically support their body. We have to understand, if we don't eat, our body's primary job is to keep us alive, right? So if there's no fuel coming in, we still have to regulate. We still have to maintain blood sugar. Our system still needs fuel. We don't run on air. And so if we're not feeding ourselves, then our body is going to start feeding off of us. It's going to break down our tissue to run. And for some people, they're like, oh, good, they're just going to use my fat as energy. Yay. I'm like, well, it just doesn't work that way, though. It's not that your body just goes right to your fat stores and that's all it uses. Fat can't regulate blood sugar. It's not sugar. It's fat. And fat can't turn into sugar. Protein can turn into sugar. So your body says, we need to regulate blood sugar. You're not eating. We'll break down some tissue. We'll break down muscle, your thymus gland, connective tissue, whatever. And we'll use that to regulate your blood sugar. Again, it's a survival technique of your system that it does that. Now, again, it's not necessarily bad. And if you want to fast, you know, it's like, well, do it on a day where you don't have to do a lot of things, right? You can rest and become more cerebral and just lie and allow that process to happen. Again, through a healing protocol, I would never recommend that. I don't think that's really what a system needs, not when you're underfueled and overstressed already. It's certainly being recommended on certain people on protocols without really, I think, understanding physiologically what their body is going through at that time. So not something I would recommend. And again, people can do it for other reasons, sure. And I think if you are in a healthy place and your body does regulate and you want to try doing a fast, cool. You know, your body is designed to withstand certain stressors for certain periods of time. It's cool that way. And you can do it. You can put acute stressors on it and it recovers and it does its job. But if you don't have to, right? I think part of this process too, as you're saying, give your GI system a rest. I'm like, look, if you're giving your GI system enough fuel, right, to regulate, the GI system still needs fuel. It has to have energy to function. It doesn't just, again, run on air. And so if you're giving it easy to digest fuel that doesn't have to work as hard, but still getting fuel and it's able to regulate, I think that would be a much better approach than just saying, nope, none at all. You don't have to work, but you're going to add fuel back in. And again, you know, the body adapts when we put a stressor upon it, like not eating, and we do it for even long periods of time, 2 or 3 days, it adapts by, again, releasing stress hormones, break down tissue. But the other part of that where it adapts, it slows down metabolic function. Anytime you put your system under stress, it's going to slow internal function down. And so that's what happened. That's why people go on these long-term fasts. They have to incorporate food back in slow and, you know, don't want to eat a lot of really hard, nutty nuts and seeds and, you know, all these things that make more challenging your system to break down. And there's a reason for that, because you've slowed everything down again. So not something that I would particularly recommend. And just getting back to autophagy, that is certainly a big word in the intermittent fasting sphere, or maybe the ketogenic sphere. And it's basically your body's cleanup system, which is a good thing. But you don't have to fast for long periods of time to go into autophagy. You go into it when you're sleeping. In fact, your body is always trying to do some sort of cleanup. That's always happening. It just goes into a greater degree under fasting. And a lot of that is because you are breaking down more stuff when you're fasting, right? So it's kind of like saying, I'm going to go mess up my room just to go clean it up, right? That's what that is. Because it's not that you're not going through autophagy, and I get it. You do want to clean up the system, but you don't need to go mess it up just to have it cleaned up.
Anything else you would like to say to perimenopausal, menopausal women who are watching and still having a hard time, like any words of hope or wisdom or anything else?
What I would recommend is really trying to understand your physiology, your biology. I think if you do that, because I've worked with so many women that just literally are 50 or 60 and just have never even thought about, I'm not eating enough, or all the stress in my life. And there's so much looking for this like external pill or potion or hormone to treat them. And it sucks. I mean, when you don't feel good or you're starting to feel perimenopause, you're going into menopause and you're having all of these symptoms, hot flashes, can't sleep, and you're insomnia, and your mood and your brain fog, it sucks. And I get it that you do want to just feel better. And for some women, maybe it is getting into hormone replacement therapy first, just so they can feel normal. And then maybe researching this, or you can kind of go into a, hey, maybe I need to really look at my life and maybe look in the foods that I've been eating. And am I supporting myself? And what does my temperature and pulse, you know, am I 96 degrees? Well, that's not necessarily a great thing. So is there something I can do to take control of my health to kind of support myself? I know, right? Menopause is still this kind of weird world that there's not a lot of answers to, other than you go to your doctor and they're like, what hormones do you want me to put you on? And, you know, again, and that can be one path. Or you go to your naturopath and you're like, what supplements do you want me to put you on? And that some of those can be helpful. But again, we have to address your whole body, and we have to address, and it can be addressed via food. And I think when we, especially this generation, because everyone's been so carb sugar phobic for so long, that if you really understand that that's your friend, and if you can learn to use it properly, it can make a world of difference in how you go through that process.
Thank you so much for joining me. If you like this conversation, I hope you'll check out some of my other interviews on the Hot Flashing podcast. Subscribe, give a rating, maybe a review, and come back for more next week.
Hot Flash Inc. was created and is hosted by Anne-Marie McQueen, produced and edited by Sonia Mack. The information contained in this podcast is intended for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem, i.e. menopause or anything else, or any healthcare questions, please promptly see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Anne-Marie McQueen and any producers or editors, disclaim any responsibility from any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of guests on this podcast are their own, and the podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about a guest's qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Hot Flash Inc. Media.